First Nations people have only started participating in the economy in recent times, in the last kind of, you know, one, two-ish decades. And what that means is a lot of the systems that are out there that are set up to support SMEs and larger businesses, First Nations people are not aware of these, haven't participated in these. They haven't been, these systems haven't been built with First Nations people and kind of cultural understandings in mind.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Rose Mary Petrus, Senior Journalist at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to traditional custodians of country and elders past, present and emerging. We have Jake Berthlau speaking with us today. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thank you for having me.
First Nations businesses in Australia face many barriers to accessing finance, including historically exclusionary policies, institutional barriers, and a lack of capital. So today we are tackling the topic of overcoming these barriers to financing. Jake is Associate Director of Business Advisory at First Australians Capital, an organisation which brings together private, public, and philanthropic investment in the Indigenous business sector. Jake, could you share with us your journey into strategy and finance as a Puerto Warraj Pathway man and what inspired you to now focus on supporting First Nations businesses?
Yes, certainly. I started my corporate career around 9 to 10 years ago. I started my journey at Crown Resorts and I was working procurement at the time and I worked across a variety of functions there. And then I made my journey into traditional finance. I worked at Treasury on New South Wales Treasury as an economist. But I had a focus on Aboriginal economic well-being. I then went on to work at various consulting firms. I worked at PwC and then McKinsey. And then I ended up at Victorian state government in Aboriginal economic development, working kind of within the business sector support arm of the division, providing investment and financial support into the Victorian Aboriginal business sector. And these kind of different roles were the catalyst for me joining First Australians Capital. I kind of got the experience of working with community and understanding the needs of community, what can support community, what can disempower community, and understanding the role I needed to play within the space and the organizations I would need to work with that would best enable that. And I got a fantastic opportunity to lead the team of business advisors across the country that work hand in hand with our First Nations business sector.
Jake, can you tell us about First Australians Capital and how it's different to other financiers?
First Australians Capital is an Aboriginal-led organisation. We provide not just necessary capital to the First Nations business sector, but we also provide the necessary and tailored support that entrepreneurs and business owners need throughout their business journey and business life cycle. How we differ from kind of mainstream lenders is we don't just write a check and say, your business is worth X number of dollars, and this is how we think finance can support your business growth. That's one element of what we do. But by and large, the main value proposition of First Rounds Capital is that you have a team of people who understand and who want to understand what exactly does your business need? What is the right amount of capital? What is the right type of capital? And how can our advisors help you across your decision-making and help guide you in challenges that your business will face? So you're not there alone. You're never alone. Whilst it may feel that way as an aspiring, you know, business owner, entrepreneur, or mature business owner, with the right organization, you'll have the right support. And we walk hand in hand and side by side throughout that journey.
What are the main challenges that Indigenous entrepreneurs encounter in the Australian business landscape? And how can the finance system as a whole work to overcome them?
I think the two major challenges that the First Nations business sector faces. One is access to capital, and the next is access to support. Access to capital, we know, is a very traditional system within banking where it really assesses a person's credit worthiness on a number of factors. It looks at, you know, the credit risk of the individual, and that's determined by various factors. I mean, does the person own a home? Do they have any securable assets? Are they an individual with some sort of substantive net worth that they can leverage or lean on to guarantee the loan? And by and large, we know that First Nations people have quite low home ownership, or home ownership is a new concept. They often have overburdened households, so the household income gets stretched very far. So on paper, net worth, you know, can be stretched and can be quite limited and is not an accurate reflection of the business's kind of financial income and financial assessment. So what that does is that disempowers and disadvantages an Aboriginal person from seeking credit or financial support from mainstream lenders. because there are a lot of cultural expectations that First Nations people also must consider. And so what we do is we look to provide a unique lens or a unique way of looking at credit assessments and financial assessments for First Nations businesses. And that's a challenge that we look to overcome as an organization. But the second challenge that First Nations businesses face as well is access to support. First Nations people have only started participating in the economy in recent times, in the last kind of, you know, 1-2-ish decades. And what that means is a lot of the systems that are out there that are set up to support SMEs and larger businesses, First Nations people are not aware of these, haven't participated in these. They haven't been, these systems haven't been built with First Nations people and kind of cultural understandings in mind. And so what that does is that creates almost a segregation of, you have the SME sector and then you have the First Nations SME sector, which seem to have a whole set of differences in terms of challenges, support requirements, and almost a separate economy. And whilst that is good in some regards, the challenge that presents is if all the investment is made on the broader SME sector without understanding the cultural nuances of the First Nations SME sector, that segregation over time and that disparity continues to grow.
So when you are evaluating potentially financing an Indigenous startup, what key factors do you consider?
When we're evaluating a new business, we look at a couple of different elements. We obviously do a financial assessment if it's a current business. Like any institution, we do look at we do participate in a financial assessment. But what we don't do is we don't just look at a financial assessment and say, okay, this business is not suitable for our lending criteria. We always try to find a solution to work with that business. If we aren't the right financial support partner for that business, we will always do a referral to someone that can help or someone that we believe can support the business. It's never you don't fit our criteria and it's a closed door. It's always an open door policy with us. In addition, we always look at the individual. We like to not just invest in businesses, but we invest in people. What is the customer's or what is the business owner's journey? What are their plans for the business? What do they want to do? How do they plan to get there? We really try to unpick that journey because not every business owner has thought about their business from start to finish. And that's where our advisors come in. We realize that a lot of business owners focus on one section of the business at any given point. And that's fantastic because they need to be hyper-focused. But in order for us to support them, we try to help walk with them side by side and help them take kind of a bird's eye view or more kind of top-down approach, looking at the entire business, helping them understand all the future challenges they may encounter, and then evaluating whether this is a journey they want to go on, what support they will need, and then how can we support them across each stage of that cycle.
Can you tell us about the partners that your organization works with?
Yeah, we work with a broad ecosystem of First Nations organizations across the country. We work with the Chamber of Commerce's across different states, particularly in Victoria. We work with the Kinaway Aboriginal Chamber of Commerce. We work with organizations such as Narramilly. We work with other not-for-profit organizations, Many Rivers. We work with Indigenous Business Australia. All of these organizations offer a unique value prop to the sector. It may be grants, it may be other soft loans or patient loans. It may be other advisory support where they may get to work with a similar sort of advisor that helps them look at their business in a different lens and take on a different considerations and also has their own network that they can offer. So for us, it's never just capital and support. It's an ecosystem approach to supporting a business. It's a wraparound services. It's how do we garner the support of a whole sector that is there and designed to support the First Nations business sector, and how do we bring all these support services to the table when we work with a business?
When it comes to government, what key policy or regulatory changes do you think are needed to improve financing gaps for First Nations businesses?
One of the largest levers that First Nations businesses have leveraged and continue to leverage and need to leverage as the Indigenous procurement policy to federal level and the Aboriginal procurement policy to state level. These policies are set up to enable the growth of the First Nations business sector, both at a state and federal level. And I think these policies have made tremendous efforts in growing the economy and growing the sector. The challenge and the further development needed is not only the ongoing growth and continuation of this policy, but it's also the accountability of the tier ones and twos that have the social procurement targets to meet. It's ensuring that if they aren't spending the money with the First Nations business sector, it's documented and reported as to why. And then there are follow-ups to building capacity and enabling these tier ones and tier twos to do so. In addition, we need to see contracts, not agreements, not contractor agreements. And they need to be contracts. A lot of the advantages that the broader business sector faces is when they take a contract, they can take that to a mainstream lender or a bank and get invoice financing for the invoices, or they can get contract financing to help them with working capital requirements for that. If an Aboriginal business isn't awarded a contract and is hired based on a kind of as needed basis with a lot of these agreements kind of stipulate, it's very hard for them to get working capital support or any other financial support to deliver on that contract and grow their business. So I think a lot of work is needed to be done in refining what the social procurement policy allows tier ones and tier twos to engage for First Nations businesses, and also ensuring there's a continuation of that policy into the future.
Jake, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can listeners find out more about the important work that you're doing?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. You can always follow First Australians Capital on LinkedIn. You can visit our website at www.firstaustralianscapital.org. And of course, you're always free to connect with myself via email at jake@firstaustralianscapital.org if you do want to have a follow-up chat or want to know any other further information.
Until next time then, I'm Rosemary Petrus, and thank you for listening to The Green Away.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.